Hello, everyone. We're in the middle of Mukta. But what I'd like to do is simply to identify different types of Mukta. You can look at the chart after the identification. It's very clear. Okay. All right. The first rule of Mukta is that something that's a kli, something that's a vessel, if it has use on Shabbos in a permitted way, then that can be moved on Shabbos, especially if all you need is the place of the thing. And if you actually can use it for something, then you could use it for that thing. For instance, and I'm calling this a kli shemalachto le'iser. The main use of this thing is to do something forbidden. For instance, there is an iron attached to a plug left on your dining room table, and you're having guests, and you feel very awkward serving lunch with a big iron on the table. Okay. You left it there before Shabbos, and you're doing some ironing on the dining room table, and you forgot it. And you wake up Shabbos morning, and to your horror, there's a big iron on the table. Now, since an iron can always be used for something, it could be used as a doorstop, it could be used as a paperweight. You have a bunch of papers flying in the wind and open near an open window, you can put the iron right on top of those papers and prevent them from continuing to fly away. So it has some kind of use, therefore it's a kli. All right? There's a hammer on the table. Usually a hammer is used to do things that are forbidden on Shabbos. But you can use this hammer to crack walnuts on Shabbos. Okay? Suffice it to say that if you set aside a hammer to do that, of course you can do that. Okay, I'm telling you after the fact, right? So that if you need the place with this hammer, this iron, whatever it might be, and if it's paper, which you can't use as a paperweight, paper can be used as a bookmark, right? So practically everything has some kind of use, so that if you need the space where this thing is sitting right now, you just have to think about using it for that thing. And even if there you don't have papers flying away in the wind, it's okay to move that thing. Okay, so that's the first category. Klishim lachdolisa. Two, muktzamach maschesron kis. We did that last time, and that's where the thing is so set aside from use because it's a very valuable thing that you would never use for something else. Okay, so this becomes pretty awesome. You see, aser, 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 all the way down. Right, this would be like a Moel's knife, a Shochet's knife. Right, my son has a Shochet's knife. I think I mentioned it last time that he sharpens with this very, very expensive Japanese stone. He would never use his Shochet's knife for anything but shechita, I assure you. Same may be true about a scalpel's knife, a scalpel or a Moel's knife or something like that. Okay, so let's know this. Muktzamach mas chesron kis. Chesron kis means it would entail a great loss to move this for some other thing. It has to be realistic. It has to be moved to a purpose. Next is called muktzamach mas gufo. I think we did this as well. You see also very usser. Philosophically speaking, I understand why this is very usser. Because it's just forbidden by its very nature, like a cigarette, or broken glass or a rock. Now that being said, a rock can be set aside before Shabbos to say, I'm going to use this for something. I don't know, to prop up a book or something, or to prop up a chair. Okay. All right. That's called kli, muktzamach mas gufo. Its very nature is to be not used on Shabbos. Okay. Now, when I mentioned broken glass, broken kalim, please be aware that some of these things, if they in the state of their broken the glass in its broken state, if it poses some kind of a danger, then it's encompassed by the very last category. It says muktzamach mas mius, which is a graf shel rei. Someone throws up on Shabbos, you can't just say, well, that's very muktzah. It is, what could be more muktzah? Muktzah means something that you don't want to use than that, right? Excrement or something like that. But graf shalrei means that since the whole concept of muktzah is midrabanan, so the rabbis say we're not going to force someone to sit on all through Shabbos in the midst of this mius, means something disgusting. You can move it, and it'll clean it up. Okay? So broken glass on Shabbos becomes like that. Right? You break a large crystal glass, and there's glass all over the floor. You're not going to say, let's leave it there till after Shabbos. Okay? Because that's Muktzah Machmas people. Next is Muktzah Machmas Isser. Philosophically speaking, this is also very usser, because Muktzah Machmas Isser means that the thing is just God said it's forbidden. Shatnez, right? Milk and meat that was cooked together. These things have to be thrown out. These things are forbidden to even have benefit from them. So of course, that's just philosophically speaking. What could be more muktzah than that? If God said this thing is forbidden to you, that's the essential definition of muktzah. It's muktzah. It's a kutz. It's I don't want it. It's disgusting, right? Even though in its actual nature, it's not disgusting. There's nothing disgusting about a fruit from a tree in its first 3 years, known as orla. Nothing inherently disgusting about grapes grown right near grain. Nothing inherently disgusting. It's just that the Torah said these things are very forbidden. So we make it disgusting to ourselves. We say, oh, what could be more muktzah than this on Shabbos? So an example of this would be finding chametz on Pesach. On Yom Tov. If you find chametz on Chol HaMoed, so pick up the chametz and throw it out. Maybe pick it up with a dustpan or something, and then just toss it. But if you find it on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to pick up chametz on Yom Tov because it's muktzah. Halacha says you should cover it up with something. If you're afraid someone may come to eat it during Pesach, then maybe you should just pick it up with a dustpan or something and then toss it. But otherwise, you just kick it under the couch, and then afterwards, after Yom Tov is over and Chol HaMoed, then or even after the whole Chag is over, if you find chametz on the last days of Pesach. Okay, the next category is very permitted. It's called Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah. Muktzah Machmas Mitzvah. That would be a shofar, or a Megillah, or a lulav and esrog. Right? But here's an important point. You know a shofar is muktzah, right, on Shabbos? But only one Shabbos of the year is a shofar muktzah. What Shabbos would that be? Correct, the Shabbos that coincides with Rosh Hashanah. Right? On the Shabbos right after Rosh Hashanah, a shofar is not muktzah. You could use a shofar, I don't know, probably to scoop up some water, maybe, I don't know. The shofar has use. But on Shabbos, that happens to coincide with Mamash, with Rosh Hashanah, so we're worried that the person may carry the shofar to shul, even if he lives in the neighborhood, and they carry the shofar to shul, or carry it to someone's house to blow for him. So because of that, we say that a shofar is muktzah on Shabbos. But if he had to move it, then you're even allowed to move it to protect it from the elements. Usually that's pretty forbidden. If you look across the board on that one, it's called Mechama Letzel. Right? Usser, 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 usser. But only on this one, mutter. Okay? So this one is actually mutter all across the board. Lulav and Esrog is only muktzah on the Shabbos that coincides with Sukkot. And Sukkot always has to have at least one day that's Shabbos. There's 7 days of Sukkot. Okay? Right? A Megillah is Mukta on Shabbos. Now, the 14th of Purim can never fall on Shabbos, but the 15th can, like this past year. Right? In other words, the day that they're supposed to read the Megillah in Yerushalayim can fall on Shabbos. When that happens, a Megillah is Mukta that Shabbos. That's someone carry it. Now it's sort of an outdated concept, because almost every place where Jews live, there's an Eruv. Right? We'll go the whole Shabbos of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Second day of Rosh Hashanah can never be Shabbos. But we'll go the whole Shabbos, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, not blowing shofar. Why? Because we're afraid someone's going to carry it to shul. But I am carrying it to shul. I have an Eruv. I can carry the shofar, and I am going to carry a baby in a carriage and a book and it's a little strange, but I guess we all don't blow shofar for the sake of the one person who's not living in the place with us. Okay. The next one is called Muktzah Machmas Nolad. Something that's Muktzah because it just wasn't here before Shabbos. Right? The most famous concept of that would be an egg that's laid on Shabbos. It wasn't here before Shabbos. Remember, I started the discussion on Muktzah saying that Shabbos is such a special day that we should always prepare for it in advance. Don't let Shabbos just come upon us and just surprise us. Oh, but would I have to do this and this? Oh, what am I going to eat? No, Shabbos, you have to prepare. You have to put some things aside. Don't just have happenstance Shabbos. Shabbos should be such a glorious day that we get up for it and we prepare for it. Okay? So we can't prepare for something that simply wasn't there before. Okay? If ice cubes melt and form a liquid, so that is Muktzah Machmas Nolad. Okay. So if you want to put ice cream in a an ice bucket for your guests on Shabbos, the best thing to do, and I'm going to teach you a little bit of love this, the best thing to do is to put some water in the ice bucket, and then put the ice cubes into the water. Not a whole lot, just a little bit at the bottom. What's the lumbus? Because when the ice cubes melt into water, it's going to melt slowly, right? Every time it melts into the water, it becomes nullified by that water. It never has a chance to get muktzah. You get it? A little bit of the ice melts, but it becomes nullified by the water that's there that you put in there. Right? It's not called mavatla nisr l'chatchil. You're not supposed to nullify things from the outset. Okay.
Question.
Yes.
Is the shofar muktzah after shkia on the first day?
On the first day of Rosh Hashanah, I'll be din all of the din of Shabbos and Yontif buys till the first day is over, which would be at Tzeisot Rochavim. On the first day of Rosh Hashanah, if you didn't get a shofar to blow, and you get one after Shkia, you should blow it then. Unless it's like right before Tzeisot Rochavim. The second day, no, because the second day is the Rabbanan, the first day is the Oraisa.
So after Shkia, now after, I don't want to say, can you, since you're not going to, you're going to blow the shofar after Shkia on the first day?
Well, if it's, there is a sort of a no man's land called Bein HaShmashot, right, where it's not quite past the first day, but it's also not quite beginning the second day. So there's that the doubtful time. So Shabbos and Yom Tov, we treat it with the chumra of both days. Still some of the first day, and it's still some of the second, and it starts to be some of the second day. That's why we started Tisha B'Av while it was still Shabbos at Shkia. Right? So, is there a practical question at hand,
say you have your shofar with you, you blew in shul, you went to Tashlik, you went to lunch, whether you're going to go to Mincha tomorrow, but you're not at the shul where you're going to be in the morning, so should you make a point of being after Marv at the shul where you're going to be in the morning with the shofar? Since you can't move it, so you can't use it after Marv, after Seis,
this is
in that shul.
Two different places? Why isn't it in the same place as the first day?
So the person who's blowing may be like, maybe
to blow someplace else or something.
Yeah, right. They're davening one place, and they'll be in the morning someplace else to be blowing.
Right. It would appear that one should not, on the first day of Yontif, make preparations for the second day of Yontif, even if it doesn't involve any melacha per se.
So after lunch, you should run to Mincha in the place where you're going to be the second day with your shofar and just leave it there? You could carry it from home in the morning, but this is not morning yet.
You can carry a shofar on Yontif, but you can use it at Yontif. You should not carry a shofar on the first day of Yontif with the sole purpose of leaving it someplace to use the second day.
Should not carry it. Well, you make it your point.
On the first day of Yontif with the sole purpose of using it on the second.
So you're on your way to Mincha with your chauffeur. Maybe someone needs to hear it, you know, after Mincha before Marv.
Then it has a use. I said with the sole purpose. If someone you might be able to blow for someone, then it's not. It's the sole purpose. Okay.
But once you're down in Marv, can you now move it to some other location? Now it's Muksa.
Yes, it's now the second day of Yontif, so it's not Shabbos anymore.
I mean, it's totally muksa until the morning.
Well, if you're talking about two different things now. Now you're back to saying the first day of Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos.
Two days you blow. Two normal days you blow. Like this year, this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
So Monday, Tuesday, whatever.
But we're talking, for the purpose of this year, please, we're talking the first day of Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos. If you have a question about this coming year, then let's do that privately afterwards.
Oh, okay.
This past
year, we're talking about Muksa just for,
so it's
talking about Muksa just for Shabbos.
And after Shabbos, it's already the second day of Yontif, you can move it or something.
Okay, so you're talking only about muksa on Shabbos, not muksa on Yontif.
A shofar isn't muksa on Yontif, but there's a separate issue of making the Yontif or Taberta, of preparing on one day of Yontif for the second.
One day for the nothing.
I'm not sure if that makes it muksa, but I think you're right that someone who goes around blowing for people maybe should have the shofar with him at all moments, just in case he meets up with someone that says, no, I can't believe it, I haven't heard shofar yet. Oh, I happen to have a shofar on me, let me blow. Right, so maybe that's reason enough. Walk around with a shofar. Okay?
Oh. Okay. Thank
you. All right, so that's called Mukta Machmas Mitzvah. The next one, we already started Mukta Machmas Nolad. We touched upon this already. That's fruits that fall from a tree during Shabbos. Okay? In this particular case, even if the fruit fell from the tree before Shabbos, the fruits are in muktzah, but I'm not allowed to eat them because there's something called a gzeira, right? A gzeira, a decree not to eat those fruits because if I eat them, I might come to pick more during Shabbos. All right, but certainly if the fruits fell on Shabbos, even if there are no more fruits on the tree and there's no way I'm going to pick any other fruits, those are muktzah. Okay? All right, so Nolad Gamur is where this thing wasn't in existence at all. As opposed to Nolad Grado, which means like it changed a little bit. For instance, ice cubes that melt into water is like Nolad Grado. It's a type of Nolad, right? Because it started off in one one form and then went to another form. You are really allowed to make ice cubes on Shabbos if there is a Shabbos bigger need for it, right? Of course, if you in the summertime you may have you're sweltering and right, so you should have ice cubes in the fridge, in the freezer, or whatever. But you have plenty enough. But if you have so many guests and they're depleted, now you finished it at night and now you want to have ice cubes for lunch, you can. It's not called boneh to turn water into something that's like built up now. It's a cube. It's like a stone. The answer is because it'll revert right back to water under normal circumstances. Right? So these are examples of nolad. The classic example is an egg that's laid on the Shabbos. Okay? All right, these are the examples I mentioned. I think one of the first things we mentioned is that if something is muktzah on Shabbos and then mixes in with other things that aren't muktzah, that becomes very prohibited. Example is one muktzah, let's say a peach fell from a tree on Shabbos. Okay? That peach is muktzah. A child picked up the peach. You saw the child pick up the peach. You know this peach is muktzah. And he puts it on the table. And then that peach got mixed up with 100 other peaches. All 101 of those peaches may not be consumed on Shabbos. Okay? You can't touch any of the peaches. They're all muktzah. Now, comparable question. If you have a peach that's truma, okay, truma means it was given to a kohen for his kohanic food. Not a great example because giving peach to truma is derabanan in itself, but still, it's bottle in 100. It needs 100 to nullify it. And then that peach got mixed up with 100 other peaches. So I now have 101 peaches. One is truma and 100 are regular peaches. You can eat all 100, you can eat them all. You have to take one out and give it to a kohen, right? Usually when things get nullified, you don't have to take out the amount that got nullified. But when it comes to truma, you do, because a kohen shouldn't lose that peach, right? So, but you can eat the other 100. Why am I treating a muktza peach more stringently than a truma peach? Truma is a Torah law. Muktza is drabonim. Or another example is if I have a treif egg and a muktzah egg. How was the egg muktzah? It was laid on Shabbos. I have a treif egg, meaning an egg from an unkosher bird, right? I have a treif egg, and I have a muktzah egg. And the muktzah egg mixes with 60 other kosher eggs, regular edible eggs that are all peeled and ready to eat on Shabbos. But this muktzah egg, right? I wouldn't call it hard-boiled because it was laid on you, right? But here is this, it's called saftana da'ara. It's obviously, you're not cooking this thing on Shabbos. It's laid on Shabbos. But here is this muktzah egg. Let's say it's yontif. Yontif, you could cook it, right? So on yontif, I can't touch this muktzah egg. But if a treif egg mixed up with 60 other eggs, I can have all 61 of them on yontif. What's the difference? Why am I treating treif more leniently?
It's majority.
Yeah, but let the majority rule over the muktzah egg too. You know you need usually 60 to nullify something, right? So the answer is, I want to introduce you to the concept of davar sheyesh lo matirin. Davar sheyesh lo matirin means it's prohibited now, but it's going to be permitted later. Hear it again? It's prohibited now. It's forbidden now because it was laid on Yontif and today's Yontif. But tomorrow, when Yontif is over, it's going to be permitted. So why eat it today, relying on bittul, relying on nullification to eat these 61 eggs or any one of them, when I can just wait till after Yom Tov is over and it'll all be, I won't have to worry about the statistic that I might eat the one that was laid on Yom Tov, even though it's very remote. Okay? It's called Dover Sheyesh Lo Matiri. But when it comes to treif, treif is never going to become mutter. It's just as forbidden now as it's going to be forbidden after Shabbos is over, or after Yom Tov is over. Okay? So that is the difference between the treif and the muktzah. Okay? Okay, the next two columns will finish off now. Basis l'davar ha'aser means that this thing is a non-muktza base, which could be a table, be a tray. There's a muktza item on it. Some money and a dish, handles and a tray, a drawer with money in it, right? A table with candelabra on it. Okay. The basis, the basis, it's close to the English word, the basis remains muktzah even after this thing might have been taken off. But if you have a table where the candles were lit at the beginning of Shabbos, you can't pick up that table and move it someplace else for the rest of Shabbos. Unless there was something else on the table besides the candles. The only thing on the table when Shabbos started were the candles, and that table becomes muktzah. You can eat on it, but you can't move it. Okay? Clear? All right? So that's known as a basis l'davar ha'aser. Now, if something is a basis l'davar ha'aser v'davar ha'mutter, in other words, the table had a candelabra on it and two challahs, right? Table had a candelabra and it also had plates and some silverware or kiddush cups. So as long as there were some permitted things on the table, right? And it can't just, it has to be something important also. Candelabra is an important thing for Shabbos. Yeah, kiddush cup, something like this, setting the table, challah, kiddush, right? Something like that, rather than just, candelabra and two napkins. Napkins aren't muktzah, yeah, but napkins aren't important, in the scheme of things for Shabbos, like at the candelabra. Okay, all right, that's known as basis l'davar ha'aser. Okay, we should look around at the things we know we'll need on Shabbos and make sure that it's all prepared. Right. Finally, the last category is muktzah machmas mius. And this might be subjective. It's too disgusting to touch, but it might just be subjective. Some people are, a little more squirmish than others. Okay. All right. These are all of the muktzah items. Now, if you page after this, you see at the top, I give you eight categories. You see the next page? Right. Page 7. Right, page 7 at the bottom. So I wrote down, there's about 50 or so items here. Okay. Okay. So you can look through these items and it's a good test of review to write the number of those 8 items at the top. Right. If you forget what each one of them might be, just go back to the previous page and it describes them. And then you just apply the materials, apply the ideas. Okay. And the creativity is to use them for a paperweight or something. Right? You have a cigarette case. What can you possibly use that on Shabbos? Huh? Okay. Cigarette, I think is, cigarette is muktzah machmas iser, it's muktzah machmas everything. Right? Okay. Now, what I'd like to do, and I just want to remind you that I'm taking a recess from this slot the next few weeks. Okay. So we're going to be, I'll publicize the next treatment of the Minchas Chinuch, this slot. But what I'd like to do is just to review some concepts for Hilchos Shabbos that are going to be important to know. And we will continue. I want to do still one or two more for Hilchos Shabbos. And I start as follows. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Chagiga that gives examples of our dependence on Torah Shebaal Peh in understanding broad swatches of the Torah. Right? The Gemara says, for instance, that Heter Nedarim is Porchin Ba'avir. The idea that we can undo and abrogate vows of another person, right? Torah only speaks about man to his daughter and a man to his wife, but not in general. Well, that's Taras Nedarim, like we do before Rosh Hashanah. Where did the Gemara get that? So it depends on Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Mishnah gives a few examples. One of them is as follows. Mishnah says, Hilchos Shabbos, the laws of Shabbos as far as the Torah is concerned, is like a mountain being held up by a hair. A hair is a single hair, is holding up, is attached to a mountain, and the hair is holding up the mountain. In other words, it doesn't have a strong basis and foundation. Okay. Why is that? Well, I mean, the Torah just says, don't do malacha on Shabbos. Now, go figure out what that means. Right? Would we know what malacha is? Is carrying a toothpick in the public domain more of a malacha than carrying heavy weights inside a house? Okay, you get what I'm saying? So, you know, it's not necessarily simple logic that determines what malacha is. If you say it's labor, then maybe we're mistaken, right? The word malacha is actually similar to the word malach. What's a malach?
Angel.
An angel. That's why, you know, when we stop doing malacha, just as Shabbos comes in, so that's when we invite the angels to our table. Malacha out, malach in. Okay? All right, so, but then we invite them to leave because they don't eat and it's not fair to invite them and not serve them food. So we just say, okay, tzeischem l'shalom, goodbye. Right, so, malacha is not, we discussed this already before, malacha is not necessarily work or labor, rather it's creative labor, creativity, which is defined by what went the creativity that went into building the Mishkan. Yeah, we described already that the four different categories of what went into building the Mishkan. First category has to do with processing food. Then the second set has to do with processing threads, right, clothing. Then leather works, shoes, and then building, place to live. Food and shelter and clothing. Those are the foundational creativities that are needed by human beings to show how different we are than animals. Animals don't need to process food. Whatever any animal needs to eat is there for them. They don't need to set up an oven or something to prepare the food, right? They'll eat whatever the grain is in the field. They don't process it into bread. Don't use fire to prepare their food. They certainly don't need clothing or shoes. And wherever they reside is whatever shelter they need. Even a bird doesn't build a house, a nest, except to nest their eggs. Not where they live per se. Just when they have the next brood. Okay, So the laws of Shabbos, the Mishnah says, what is the Torah? What's the Torah's chiddush about Hilchos Shabbos? It says, Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah. Because the Torah does juxtapose the references to Shabbos with the building of the Mishnah at the end of Sefer Shmos. Right? You all know that. Right? So it teaches, build me a Mishkan, but keep Shabbos. Mishkan is holy space. Shabbos is holy time. You get it? So holy time is bigger than holy space. After all, God is all space and dimension. So you cannot encompass God with a space restriction. But God is defined by its very name as time. It's a combination of was, is, and will be. Hayah, Hoveh, Yehiyeh. It's God's name, the four letters that make up God's name. It's all time. Past, present, and the future. All simultaneous. It's infinite. It's the full past as far back as you can go and the full future as far ahead as you can go. And that's all encompassed in this moment. Okay? Go figure. So holy space is trumped by holy time. And the manifestation of this is that we don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. Okay? So, therefore, the Gemara says that it's Meleches Machsheves, it's our intention that this becomes a positive, creative act. One of the 39 Melechos is destruction, to destroy. Right? How can one of the 39 Melechos be to destroy? That's not positive. So the Gemara answers, yes, it is positive. The Mishnah answers, if it's Amanas Livnos, if it's for the sake of rebuilding in this place or I need the materials, so then of course that's an act of building. This is philosophically sound. It means that whatever God does always has in its final analysis something to be built up. Even if it looks destructive in the moment. Right? Malbim says this in the beginning of Yirmiyahu, when that prophet says, he's told his mission from God, Re'ei yifkaraticha ala goyim v'ala mamlechos. In tosh v'lin totz v'lignos v'lahavid v'laharos, to demolish, to uproot, to destroy, and to tear down, v'livnot v'lin tov, to rebuild and to replant. Malbim says all six words are positive. Just that the rot had spread so significantly in ancient Israel that it had to be uprooted and it had to be totally destroyed before it could be rebuilt. The destructive process was part of the rebuilding. You ever see sometimes they take down a big stadium or something and they put dynamite all over it and it just levels it in a second. That's part of the building process. That's the, you know, as opposed to taking a ball and chain and, you know, and crashing. It takes a little more time. Okay, so then I have just introduced you to a concept called Meleches Machsheves. Meleches Machsheves. It has to be a melacha that your mind considers, it wants it to be positive. So I want you to introduce you to a few other terms. There's something in Shabbos called a davar she'eino miskaven. Right? Davar she'eino miskaven. Something he does not intend. For instance, I'm walking on a cement block and I see there are lots of blueberries, or I see that there are things that if I step on them, I'm crushing them. You're not supposed to crush fruit on Shabbos, but I'm not crushing them for the sake of eating them. It's not Mishnah Miskaven. I'm not even thinking of the Malacha. Right? Okay, now. In this case, that I would say that's not even a davar she'eino miskaven. It's more like something called misasek, which I'll get to shortly. Let's say I want to open my refrigerator door, which is a permitted act on Shabbos. But that must result in a light being turned on. So that Dovah Shem Miskaven transforms into what's known as a psik resha. Familiar with that? Psik resha. Psik resha literally means, now you'll remember this, cut off its head. Right? What do you mean cut off its head? Remember the example in the Gemara? A kid wants a chicken head to play with. So the father gets a knife and he's ready to cut off the chicken's head on Shabbos. Someone says, no, you can't do that on Shabbos. He says, why not? Because if you cut off the chicken's head, it's going to die. So the man said, oh, I don't want the chicken to die. I know that you're not supposed to kill animals on Shabbos. But I just want the chicken head. I want the chicken to live, actually. So I'm just going to take the chicken head and hope that the chicken lives. So the man says, what are you, crazy? Psik resha below yamos? You think you can cut off a chicken's head and it won't die? That's just a sort of an exaggerative example of if you do X, that must result in Y, where X is a permitted act, but Y is a forbidden act, right? Then everybody agrees, even Rav Shimon, who usually allows it, Rav Shimon Miskaven, as opposed to Rav Yehuda, who doesn't, then even the one who allows a Dovah Shem Miskaven, he says that the psik resha is prohibited. Okay? Everyone, you see it? A psik resha, something that must result in a forbidden act, chicken dying in this case, is forbidden. Now, let me introduce you to another concept as follows. This concept is called, listen carefully, Malocha She'ena Tzricha L'gufa. These concepts only exist in the laws of Shabbos because of Meleches Machsheves, the Gemara Chagiga I started with here. Malocha She'ena Tzricha L'gufa means I did a malocha, but I don't need the thing that is the normal way of doing this malocha. Classical case in the second Shabbos of this is I'm taking a shovel and I'm digging a pit. Okay? What's the malocha shetzricha legufa by digging a pit? I'm digging a pit because I need
a hole?
The hole, exactly. Very good, exactly. Most people answer because I need the dirt. No! If I need the dirt, that's malocha she'ena tzricha legufa. That's a malocha where I don't need the thing that I'm doing. Okay? So if you dig a pit because you want the dirt, that's not a violation, a Torah violation of Shabbos according to Rav Shimon. Malocha she'ena tzricha legufa is I'm digging a pit because I just need the dirt. Malocha she'tzricha legufa is I'm digging a pit because I want the hole, I want the pit. You get it? Malocha she'tzricha legufa, I'm digging a pit, I want the pit. Malocha she'ena tzricha legufa, I'm digging a pit, I don't care about the pit, I want the dirt. But now I'm going to ask you a fundamental question asked by Tosfos. Please don't let me go on unless you're getting the question. Okay? How could the Gemara say that Rav Shimon agrees that if it's a Dovah Shem Miskaven but a psik resha, that it's a violation of Shabbos, a Torah violation of Shabbos. Because if I chop off the chicken's head, it's certainly going to die, even though I don't want it to. It's not my main concern. I just want the head for my kid to play with. I don't want it to die. I'm sorry, Charlie. It's going to die. That's 100% the result of your action. It's going to result in a prohibition. Right? So here's my question. Rav Shimon does not consider malocha she'netzricha legufa to be a violation of the Torah. But the Gemara insists that he does consider the psik resha to be a violation of the Torah. Can anyone anticipate my question? Why isn't the malocha she'netzricha legufa a psik resha? I hope you're getting this. If I'm digging a pit because I just want the dirt, surely that's a psik resha. A psik resha, what was done? The pit's there. What difference does it make whether I want the pit or I want the dirt? I dug a pit. That's a told of Choresh, one of the 39 malachas. Okay? You get what I'm saying? Surely every malacha shini tzricha legufa, the word malacha appears there, for goodness sake. He digs the pit. The pit was dug. What difference does it make why he wants the pit dug? If you're getting this question, it goes a long way towards understanding the fundamental point that Shabbos commemorates creation. It is defined by creating God's Mishkan. It entails all that is creative in what the human being needs to do to show our humanity. Right? It's not about labor. It's about creativity. And a malacha she'ina tzricha legufa, where you don't want the thing that's the normal malacha out of this thing, is lacking in malachas machsheves. Now you could say, well, surely a davar shini miskaven is too. Right? But don't you see, the man wants to chop off that chicken's head. The man wants to dig a pit. The main thing for chopping off the chicken's head is because I want to eat the chicken, I want it dead, and I want to eat it. But killing a chicken is a violation of chop. This guy says, no, I don't want the chicken to die. I just want something for my kid to play with. That essence causes it to have a lack of Malachas Machshavos. Okay, Chavra, I'm sorry to say I have to end a little early today because of the Amuna project that the women have. And Lisa needs a little extra time today to put it together. So we have a brief recess now for a few weeks. I'll keep you posted. We have, today we passed the halfway mark in our treatments. So Baruch Hashem, we're well on the way to completion. And perhaps after then, I suspect that after then I'll go back to these classes. Okay, everybody, have a great night. Thank you all for being here. Be well, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, everybody. Stay healthy, stay well.